Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to this special Facebook Live broadcast with myself, Berin Cross, and Joe Donoghue. Yeah, we're back together far sooner than we expected. Pretty much 24 hours ago, we were together at Elland Road in a windy and cold Elland Road after another bitter defeat in the Premier League for Leeds United. And I'm sure, as you are aware, unless you have been living under a rock, 4.5 hours ago, Leeds United officially confirmed Marcelo Bielsa is no longer the head coach at Elland Road. And just saying that is still quite hard to do. It's a very, very emotional day. And whilst we're professionals and we've had an objective perspective on this for the past few years, and it's been an amazing thrill ride, it's hard to keep the emotion out of it. You know, he has been truly transformational in every single aspect of our jobs, of your lives, and of the football club itself and its history. And there are 12 games now for Leeds United to try and justify the decision. And the pressure's on. Joe, initial thoughts, obviously it didn't really come as a shock when it did arrive, but what are your thoughts now that it's confirmed and we are, as I say, 4.5 hours into a post-Bielsa world?
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange to contemplate that, you know, what goes on from here, how everybody moves forward. But as we know, when things like this happen, you know, life does move on. But I think the best sort of way of putting it is the outpouring of emotion, the outpouring of gratitude and thanks that various people have displayed, whether that be on social media, whether that be lots of fans going down to the ground. Just that doesn't happen for just your average manager. You know, it's everything about Bielsa was that it was more than he was just a manager. He will obviously always say that he was, you know, an employee of the club, but it was the hope, the belief that he instilled, the achievements, and just the way that he went about it along the way. It really, I mean, for you, Berin, especially, you know, following it from the beginning, must have been, you know, just an incredible journey. And you know, to have seen that, as you say, you know, it's hard to separate the emotion from it because it is a very sad day.
Yeah, incredibly so. Like you say, from day one, it's just been an absolute privilege. Joe Mewis, another of our colleagues that some of our viewers will be familiar with, you know, since he came in, it was just timed perfectly with how we started at Leeds Live and got going and followed the journey from day one, and it has just been. I mean, those first 3 years, I mean, there were virtually no dips. I mean, they had the playoff defeat of Derby County, then we had the title-winning season of the second year, and then to go and finish third in the Premier League. Just absolutely incredible. And just seeing the way the city has changed, murals around the city, that's the most important thing for me, is that there is evidence there that he will not be forgotten for decades to come. People will move in and out of Leeds, even people who aren't football fans, which I think is the nicest aspect. He is breaking through. He's penetrating through to the wider narrative of Leeds life. People will drive past those murals on a day-to-day basis and will at least wonder, oh, who's that guy? Or, you know, what was he famous for? Or, you know, why is he so adored? And they'll go and search out that story and find it and then share it with their friends and family. And that's what's so important to me. I think it is the legacy has to remain intact, and I'm sure it will in time. People will forget about this small blip that has occurred in the very recent past. It's been a pretty tough season as a whole, to be honest. And I mean, as recently as, what, 3 weeks ago, this would have been considered unthinkable. We yeah. came away from the Aston Villa game. It wasn't a perfect performance. They were 3-1 down, as we approached halftime, and of course Dan James did get that crucial second goal just before the break, but a 3-1 down, it felt like Villa were running away from it with it again. So we come away from that 3-3, the exhilaration of it, the adrenaline of it, and we're thinking, even though it wasn't a win and it wasn't perfect, that's the kind of statement performance or comeback that you need to then propel things on into the next phase of the season. And at that point, the idea of losing Marcelo was still a distant nightmare. But the last five, six games have gone past now. And it's become more and more clear, hasn't it? Or at least less of a shock is probably the way to phrase it. It's still difficult, and there is still a lot of people who would have stuck by him and said, we have to just stick with it now. You know, we are committed to this process. We have to see it through now until the end. But it has become less of a shock, hasn't it, with how it's gone the last few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the statistics, and we discussed that on the live yesterday, didn't we, about, you know, the number of goals conceded, the consecutive defeats, and the manner in which it's seemed, you know, very listless. And obviously that decision has been taken by the board, that they've obviously felt that they want to go a different direction than Bielsa, because obviously there's you know, the stakes are incredibly high. There's a lot at play, and with 12 games left to play this season, you know, you think that, you know, get somebody else in and see how they can, you know, mould the squad and try and turn a corner with it. Because ultimately, I think the last few games, as you said, Baron, it looked as though it was going one way, and that was Leeds sort of diving headfirst into a relegation battle. And I think, you know, there's probably an element of frustration with Bielsa's sort of insistence on continuing with a style which had not, you know, paid dividends in many weeks. But, you know, just going back to your point about the Villa game and the, you know, the unthinkable, the reality of the situation we're currently in, you know, go a little bit further back. I mean, it must be just over a month now when Newcastle came to Elland Road and Leeds played them off the park, essentially, you know, lost to a free kick from John Joe Shelvey, and Leeds were the much better team. You know, you looked at that and you thought that could be the catalyst. If that was a win, Leeds would have pulled some, you know, it must have been 8 or 9 points clear of the drop at that point. And on the balance of chances, Leeds deserved the 3 points, but obviously Newcastle got them. And from there, it's been harder and harder to justify in the board's eyes, clearly, that the approach that Bielsa has personified throughout. And I say that he's overachieved repeatedly throughout his tenure. Yeah. You know, you say that there's been no blips. I mean, this is probably the first major one, and obviously because of the time pressure towards the end of the season, a decision which a lot of people might not necessarily agree with has been taken. But yeah, it's a difficult one to sort of reconcile with in the immediate aftermath. As you say, we're only about 4.5 hours into that post-Bielsa era. But I think over the coming days, I think that's when we'll begin to really sort of understand and comprehend what the future is going to look like now.
Yeah, I think, like you say, the Newcastle game does stand out. I think Marcelo has referenced that game in a few of his recent press conferences when he has come under increasing questioning with the way things are going. And I think the fact they came away from a match like that where they should have won and lost, psychologically, that's very, very hard for the player to take, he said. And then, of course, just the anemic element of the performance at Everton. I mean, that really was perhaps... It's far from the first defeat of the season, but the manner of it and the timing of it must have at least sharpened focus in the boardroom, and they must have thought, okay, that's quite alarming, really. There was next to nothing to show from that performance, and then we run into that run of fixtures against some of the best teams in the country, and as you say, I mean, conceding 20 goals in 5 games, I mean, it literally is unprecedented in terms of a calendar month in the Premier League. And they are the reasons why they... I mean, again, I was about to say that's why he's gone, but I mean, many of us are still looking past that and saying, you know, he should have stayed and he deserved the chance to stay. And I wonder if the fact that now he's gone and the plaster has been ripped off, that the people are now sort of craving that nostalgia and they are craving... the romanticism of the idea of keeping him, because he has had such an effect on people and an emotional effect. And I wonder if perhaps his legacy may have been tarnished if he'd stayed on, if they had kept losing these games, and especially in the games coming up where they need to win, i.e. you know, Leicester is still a tough game, but, you know, home matches with Villa and Norwich, they simply have to win those matches if they have got any ambitions of being remotely comfortable as we approach April and May. If they'd lost those as well, and we're looking at a 7-8-9 winless run, I wonder if then that would have tarnished legacy. And like with the boos we saw yesterday, it becomes much more vitriolic. I don't know. Hindsight will tell us, but I think that's one school of thought at least.
Yeah, I mean, what you say there about sort of the emotion and the connection with the fan base, I think that's important. I think it's something that we should really address as well, because you know you look at how many fans have shared their views about how they've you know they've fallen back in love with football because of him. You know, the risk of tarnishing that with a poor 6 months to end his reign would have been hard to see. Would have been hard to see it happen. You know, like live by Bielsa, die by Bielsa, essentially. You know, that is sort of. You know, it's sad to say, but you know, it's that's kind of the mantra that has happened, hasn't it? Because his undoing has been his I think he referred to it himself as his blind faith in his principles and his ideals. And I think what people will remember him for is obviously the stuff that happened on the pitch. But for me, it's just the thing that separates him, the thing that makes him the, I don't know, the figurehead of sort of a revival was that everything that happened off the pitch. You know, the you hear the stories of him, you know, ringing people up and you know speaking to them with when they've maybe had a rough time or they're ill or something like that. And you know the putting hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of his own money into building a gym for the staff at Thorpe Arch and you know the pictures that you see with him, you know, bringing sweets for kids at games as they're getting off the bus. So those little personal quirks, those little personal moments that really endeared him to the fan base, and tarnishing that, personally, I think it wouldn't have tarnished it even if you know, the season was allowed to carry on as it has been, because you know the strength and the weight of what he has achieved, you know, not just on the pitch but in people's hearts and minds, is something which is going to be incredibly difficult to erase. So I don't think necessarily that would have tarnished it. It might have soured people to his, I don't know, maybe you could say pig-headedness over the style on the pitch. But I think from a personal aspect and what he's achieved in you know uniting a city in sort of an abstract sense and how he made people feel, I don't think that'll ever be tarnished.
It was that humane approach, wasn't it? He was a great philosopher, and the way he spoke about football and life in general was certainly a way for all of us to kind of learn how to live life. He was an incredibly fair and honest guy. Just the way his approach to every single subject in a press conference, as soon as you thought you might get some cynicism out of him or some criticism for somebody out of him, he just wouldn't take the bait at all. You know, referees must love him because he's never criticised a single one of them. I mean, you can imagine yesterday's handball that Rodri did. I mean, you can imagine Bielsa saying, you know, obviously VARs had their reasons to believe that was the correct decision, and we have to trust them. It's a great, great loss. And I've read a lovely piece. I think it was on the Square Ball that somebody had penned for them about life after Bielsa. It may have been in Chile, and they are known as the widows of Bielsa because life just doesn't quite, or at least football life doesn't just quite hit those same levels. And I think that is going to be the thing that hits people in the coming days, is that regardless of what Bielsa's successor does, even if he's a very successful coach and gets some results out of the team, especially this season, are they quite going to be able to hit those high notes that Bielsa did in just his the poetry in his language, the way he played football, the way he spoke about football, that high risk, high reward approach, about it being the quality of the product, about it being entertaining. It wasn't about the result for Bielsa, was it? It was the
No.
entertainment factor, and that's what's awakened something in people in Leeds, especially after 16 years of abject misery. That's what people are going to miss. It's just the passion of it and the shooting from the hip sort of nature of it, and how it was swashbuckling. It was never say die. It was, you know, go to Anfield and nearly beat them.
Yeah.
Draw 4-3 with a late penalty, go to Man City and win 2-1 away from home with 10 men. That's what people are going to miss. It's the romanticism of it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on there with the romanticism and the sort of the humane approach that he had. You know, it's rare. It's very, very rare for in the modern age, you know, especially in the sort of the hypersensitive arena of sort of Premier League football and football management, that he always just seemed so separate from that, so isolated from it. You know, he was, I mean, one absolutely one of a kind and so objective in everything. I mean, for us, you know, you try and maintain that objectivity. For you know, the it's what made the glimpses of him enjoying the celebrations at promotion. You know, the hug that he did with one of his backroom team. I can't remember who it was. Was it Pablo Quiroga?
Yeah.
After the Burnley game earlier this year, it made those fleeting moments so much more significant and special because you saw how much it meant to him. And he experienced it as a fan, but was able to maintain, you know, the separation that, you know, most fans would be most football supporters would be compromised if you put them in charge of their favorite football club. But Bielsa was able to compartmentalize that. And I think, you know, kind of going through this right now, it's not something that yesterday, even as though the news began to break, it's not something which I considered that we'd be talking about so soon.
No.
But it feels quite cathartic that, you know, we're discussing sort of the, you know, the highs and the lows. And it's, I think anybody who really came into contact with him, especially on a personal level, will tell you that, you know, the man had something different. And yeah, and that's what made the whole journey really special.
Yeah, I think, like you say, because he was such a private and professional person, when you did get those snippets of emotion and those anecdotes that people have of meeting him in Wetherby or elsewhere, and, you know, like you say, receiving gifts from him sort of either outside the team hotel or down at the stadium as they walked in, especially in pre-COVID times when people would just line the avenue up from the coach into the stadium and he would offer gifts to young children. It was... And the video, you'd have seen it, the video of him coming out on the night that promotion was confirmed, and he comes out of his property in Wetherby, and there's just this small throng of people, not too many, not too few, just the right amount of people, and just giving him that generous applause, and just see, it's just the absolute modesty. And sometimes we thought it was a bit false modesty, and he was almost too modest because he's just professional to the last, and everything good that happens is because of the players, and everything that bad that happens is because of him. And I'm sure it would be fascinating to know how the players are feeling in the coming days, because I'm sure they are humans, and it's hard to take the thrashings they have taken. And I'm sure they would be lying if they hadn't had the odd pang or thought of this isn't working anymore, or Marcelo needs to change, or the club needs to make a change. I'd be amazed if none of them have even had that thought, even just privately, not vocalized it, but just thought to themselves, this is just not working. But I wonder now that he's gone and we're into that post-Bielsa era, I wonder how they'll feel in the coming days, weeks and months, and just reflect upon those 3.5 years and how he's transformed their lives, not just their abilities as footballers, but their lives and their families' lives. I see that Calvin Phillips and Liam Cooper are two people who have referenced how Marcelo has changed their families' lives, because, of course, for Calvin especially, we can talk about, he's put him on the map. I mean, let's be honest, pre-Bielsa, Calvin was a very, very average box-to-box championship midfielder who didn't know whether he was an attacking midfielder or a defence midfielder, and he was not really going anywhere. He was going to be a very steady player for Leeds if they remained in the championship. But he's come in and seen something, as Calvin has said today, that he didn't see in himself, and has made him the fulcrum of the England team. And what that does to somebody's life and their family's lives, we cannot quantify. And same with Liam Cooper. I know playing for Scotland perhaps isn't the same honour as it is for playing for England, but still, Liam Cooper was not somebody you looked at as a very standard, steady championship centre-back and thinking he'll go and play for Scotland or he will captain Leeds United to a title. That's maybe the bigger thing for Liam, is less playing for Scotland and more being the captain of the Leeds team that finally ended their exile. I just wonder how the players will feel in the weeks and days and just think, you know, how much they're going to miss him.
When it's beginning to set in, you know, the it's only real after it's sort of had time to.
You don't know what you had until you've lost it. That's the saying, exactly. Isn't it? You don't know what you've got until it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. And it is a very apt sort of way of putting it, because I think, you know, while there will have been, you know, individuals who were maybe, you know, a little bit fatigued with the relentlessness or the pressure or the you know, the faith in principles which perhaps weren't paying dividends as they were at a certain time, you know, 12 months ago. I think the culture that has been sort of generated at the club, it's going to be difficult to replicate that. It's going to be very difficult to replicate that. And naturally, you know, the players, they're human beings just like us. Comparisons will be made. And moving on from this era, the best and the only way to do that is to get wins on the pitch, and that's an enormous burden to bear for whoever comes in next. And I think it's a very, I don't want to say poison chalice now, because it's not. It's still a fantastic club to manage. The situation is infinitely better than when Marcelo Bielsa took over the job. Yeah. So it's important to posture it with that. But I think it's a job which, people will probably be taking a look at and thinking, well, I'm not actually sure I want to follow in the footsteps of the man who is referred to as God on the streets of Leeds. You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting times, definitely very interesting times ahead. There'll be a lot of people watching this who maybe are sort of losing their faith, or they feel as though they've lost something today. They've lost somebody. But I think, it's a bit of a cliched phrase, but I'm very pleased, and I'm very pleased for everyone connected with Leeds that it did happen, that those times were able to have been enjoyed and to have been cherished and to have been experienced, because it's so much better that it did happen, and ultimately the way it's finished is not the way that anybody would have liked it, but it's a blessing that it did happen.
It's like following any iconic boss, isn't it? We've seen it with, Bielsa hasn't been there as long as a Sir Alex Ferguson or as an Arsene Wenger, but any club who does have that iconic, legendary manager, it's very, very hard to follow. No matter how messy the ending might have been, it's very, very hard to follow them, because there is that direct comparison both in the dressing room, outside the dressing room, and on the terraces. So whoever does come in, will know the situation they're walking into, and they'll have to adapt to it. And like you say, the only way they're going to come through that is by putting wins on the board. Let's look a little bit at the boardroom then, and look at the people that have made this decision and why they've made it. So clearly, Andrea Radrozzani, ultimately, as the majority shareholder, is the man who he foots the bill. He's the guy that ultimately makes the decision. There are people he speaks to. The board will have a democratic conversation. They will all put their thoughts forward, but ultimately Andrea is the guy that pulls the trigger, in other words. And he will have looked at the situation and will be thinking, we cannot afford for this club to get relegated, and he's obviously felt the need to act. Looking ahead now then, they've made the decision because clearly they believe that somebody can come in now with 12 games to go and do a better job than Marcelo. What do you see as the biggest challenges in those 12 games to come now, and how they go about turning this around? Because it's almost a third of the season, quite strange. It feels like we're already sort of hurtling towards the end of the season, but it is still virtually a third of the season to go. What are they going to find when they walk in through the door, and how are they going to try and get a tune out of this team?
I think it's a big, big task, because the fixtures are coming thick and fast. You look at the games which are coming up, there's going to be little opportunity to get to know the new squad, or as in the new coach to get to know the squad. There's going to be an extensive tuning out process. Even if you bring in a coach with a similar style of play, the day to day at Thorpe Arch under a Bielsa regime has been so specific for so long that the players are they're going to be completely accustomed to a different way of doing things, and that's going to I don't want to say play havoc, but that's going to cause, I don't know, what would you say? It has the potential to disrupt, I think, the routine that the players have got themselves into. And maybe that's a good thing. As I'm saying it, maybe it's a case of, the methods and practices that Bielsa and his staff had, comes to a natural end point. And there isn't that need for freshness and new ideas and a different way of looking at things. But I think there will be a tuning out process, because, a different manner. There's no point bringing in somebody else to then play the same style of football as Bielsa when you could just have kept Bielsa anyway. So I think that's probably the biggest task in the immediate term is getting a tune out of the players who are so accustomed to a certain way of working.
And it's more than just Bielsa, isn't it? It's the ripple effect. There's going to be a lot of coaches that go with him now. Obviously, the entire analytical team will go with him. He's got a lot of, not apprentices, but sort of, I can't think of the phrase, but they would come in and they would basically work for him and look to almost feel like proteges, really, and just sort of almost look to prove themselves and try and find a way into his inner circle, or just to learn from him. And they're there for Marcelo. They're not there to work for Leeds. They're there because that's where Marcelo is. So there's going to be a lot of people following him out of the door. I mean, not to mention with his contract situation, I think it's quite a complex series of contracts that are interlinked, and I'm sure they will go. They will almost be terminated in the same way, though that hasn't been confirmed by the club yet. So you are looking at bringing a head coach in, but you're also going to need to bring some backroom team in. I'm sure the under 23 staff may be lent on. There are still staff there that were there before Bielsa, and they, of course, will carry on, you would assume. So there is going to be a huge challenge for whoever comes in. But like you say, maybe the disruptive effect is what they need to shake them from this malaise, because, I mean, it was insipid yesterday, the way Tottenham scored those two goals so comfortably. So it's going to be tough. The board will know they've taken a risk with this. They have to know. I mean, Andrea has described it as the hardest decision of his tenure. You know, absolutely has to be, given what he's done to the football club and how he has, you know, he's effectively delivered upon Andrea's investment for him. You know, Andrea has come in with this vision, but Marcelo is the one that's delivered it, and he's the one that's put it into effect on the pitch. So it has to be a difficult decision to then remove that factor from your business and from your business model that's built for success. So it's a big ask. I mean, the reports are it's Jesse Marsh. I mean, there are so many reports out there that there has to be a large degree of truth. And the club have confirmed in their statement that they will aim to confirm a successor tomorrow. And given the backlash they have had, on social media at least, for the Bielsa decision, I can't imagine they would look to make a rod for their own back, another rod for their own back, by saying something's going to happen tomorrow and then it doesn't. So the assumption would be that if the successor hasn't signed, then there is at least some kind of verbal agreement that gives them the confidence to say, by the way, tomorrow we're aiming to announce a successor. And no moment too soon, really. I mean, I think there has to be this mourning period that we're currently in. But if they waited any later than tomorrow, then you're well into the thick of it in preparing for Leicester City, and you're losing time. And clearly they've made the decision now because they realise they need to give the successor as much time as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's the right thing to do, because while we are definitely in that mourning period, as you say, you know, the relentlessness of the Premier League calendar, the expectation is that, you know, you've just got to hit the ground running, you've got to continue on, you've got to carry on. There's not going to be a lot of time, and ultimately today is that day. Today has been the day for everyone to say their thank yous and to you know, say their well wishes. But tomorrow is a new day and tomorrow is a new week, and ultimately, you know, if you said that in a statement that you're aiming to announce a new manager, then you kind of do need to follow through with that and give the whoever comes in, obviously it looks like it'll be Jesse Marsh, the best opportunity to get 3 points out of Saturday's game, because ultimately they are the games, they are the fixtures that are going to justify whether this decision to relieve him of his duties has been successful or not.
Just before we come to a few comments, we'll get some people's comments on the screen just to wrap this up. But let's talk a little bit about Jesse Marsh then, if we are going to look forward and we are going to assume that it's going to be him, given he is out of work and reading between the lines, the club have pretty much got a successor sewed up, I should say. From what we know, Joe, doing the reading around him, plays in a similar way as what you would say. I think Marcelo is described as so unique by so many managers, it's hard to find somebody who is exactly the same, but there are at least the tenets of a high-pressing, high-energy system there that Jesse Marsh will draw upon, and he'll look to use that skill set. But from what you've read, what do people at Salzburg and Leipzig say about him? I know that when we spoke yesterday, you said that at Leipzig it didn't go particularly well for him, as it can do for some coaches at some clubs. But what are the sort of general things we need to look out for? What are the sort of the anecdotes that have come out from people that have worked for him in the past?
I mean, first and foremost, he's been a company man so far in his career, sort of under the Red Bull umbrella. You know, he was at New York Red Bulls. He came over to Europe and worked as an assistant first at RB Leipzig, and then went to be head coach at Red Bull Salzburg in Austria. Worked with the likes of Erling Haaland, Brendan Aaronson, you know, those types of players. And then got the call up, if you will, to go and do the top job in the Red Bull empire, which is the Leipzig top job. Always going to be a difficult task for him there, replacing Julian Nagelsmann, who obviously went on to manage Bayern Munich, you know, one of the most innovative young coaches in the game. So again, you know, the expectation there will have been, you know, quite considerable. But as a manager in terms of style, he, as you say, you know, he's a proponent of a high pressing approach. You know, he will inherit a squad which is catered to what he would prefer. You know, we're not talking about a Jose Mourinho or Antonio Conte type team where, you know, the players are very sort of geared towards, you know, what we saw yesterday from Spurs, you know, keeping it tight, keeping it compact. I think we'll still see some similar football, similar score lines. But with Marsh on the personal side, it's like chalk and cheese compared to Bielsa. I mean, he's very much more of an arm around the shoulder type of manager with the players. He'll be very ingrained with them on a day-to-day basis, whether that be on the training ground or at the stadium or anything like that. You know, Bielsa obviously operated that separation that worked for him. Marsh is very different. You know, there's been videos of his team talks when he was at Salzburg in the Champions League. And, you know, he's quite vocal. He's quite quite energetic in when he's been discussing with his players. So he's somebody who's got a lot of heart. Ultimately, heart won't win you football matches, but no. it's a good starting point if he is to be the man who comes in.
Let's go to some comments then before we wrap up. Billy Hornby, afternoon lads. I really don't envy the next manager coming into the club. A lot of pressure from the club and the fans. Marcelo should have been given the opportunity till the end of the season. I mean, that sort of aptly sums up the way a lot of the fan base feels, at least on social media. I wouldn't for a minute say that social media is always an accurate barometer of the worldwide fan base, but that does tick a lot of boxes, doesn't it, from what we're seeing online, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people probably think that Bielsa's had enough credit in the bank to see out the season. You know, Leeds wouldn't be in the position they are in the Premier League, in the Premier League full stop, without Bielsa. So, you know, the greatest challenge of his tenure at Leeds sort of being taken away from him, as in keeping Leeds in the division when times have got tough because of injuries and COVID and everything. I think a lot of people probably would have preferred for him to have stuck around. That Russ's comment there just shows the extent of the impact that he's had on the fan base, because I mean it's an outpouring. It's a personal message.
Thanks for everything you've done for the club, Marcelo. Leeds fans love you more than you will know. You'll always be welcome back to our great club. You brought us back to the Premier League where many other managers failed to do so. You're a Leeds legend, Marcelo. Gracias, El Loco. I mean, that really does sum it up quite nicely with the way people are feeling about Marcelo's exit. And I think it's only going to grow more and more in the coming days and weeks. Steve Mayer, a lot of emotion around at the min, not gone down well. Thinks it's more the fact that the way the board have handled it and the way Bielsa has been treated, but unfortunately onwards and upwards, 12 games stay by PL status. I mean, there is a bit of talk about the way it's sort of been handled and the way the announcement came. I think the club, of course, have put the announcement out at 11 a.m. on Sunday the 27th. Reports, of course, from the Telegraph a week or two ago, which were far less conclusive. They were just saying who the candidates would be. And then, as we say, the Athletic ran something yesterday at full time, and some people are a little bit frustrated with that, but I think ultimately this is just how the industry works. People will look to break stories when they can. And whilst it's not nice, I think Marcelo did deserve, you know, one of the classiest send-offs we've seen in football management. Ultimately, if news gets out there and the club aren't in control of that news, I think people are sort of pointing the finger saying the club have briefed against Bielsa, or the club have been briefing this before it's happened. I think you're joining the dots there that might not exist. This news comes from various many sources. It doesn't necessarily have to have come from the club directly. People do talk in the industry on the other side of the fence, and news just get out. It's just the way it happens. That's why you see so many stories broken before clubs announce it still. I mean, it's just the way journalism works, and it's how journalists will keep themselves in a job, really. That's the currency journalists sort of deal in. So I think that's probably the way. I know it doesn't feel particularly nice, and I think everybody would love the nice, clean announcement with nothing before it, but you're not going to be able to keep a lid on news like that when people are talking about it, and it's such a big name at such a big club. Tom Walton, the pace the new guy is coming in makes me think he was gone in the summer anyway. Hopefully we get a new manager's bounce in the upcoming games. I mean, there's certainly that theory there, Joe, isn't there? That in the summer, you know, his contract was up anyway. I mean, this is the double-edged sword to his 12-month contracts. A, it gives him the flexibility to decide his own future, but B, it also gives the club a bit of flexibility to say, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. So I think with the way the season was going, even if they had stayed up, it did feel, unless there had been some miraculous finish to the season like last season, it did feel like it probably would have been a natural parting of the ways this summer, didn't it?
Yeah, it seemed as though it would be sort of the natural end point. And I mean, we know that this is the longest, or this was the longest, that Bielsa has spent at any club in one go. And, you know, when you think of the fact he's 66 years old as well, you know, he's many, many, many miles from home, obviously in Argentina. It did feel as though the prospect of Bielsa leaving at the end of the second season in the Premier League was, you know, a clean break, a natural end point, which is probably why the decision to relieve him of his duties now probably rankles just a little bit, because it's just in front of the finish line, just before. And that's something which I imagine is not sitting right with too many people.
Adam Trudgeon, best football for years, 20 years of rubbish, then Bielsa turns up so good. Would have given him to the end of the season, gutted. But the money is in the Prem, so if the owners think he can't change it, then he has to go, unfortunately. I mean, that's the other side of the coin. I mean, some people are looking at it and thinking the club simply have to stay in the Premier League, and some people can at least understand why Radrizzani and the board have made the decision. You can understand the logic. It's not like Bielsa has gone on an 11-match unbeaten streak and they've just ousted him. You know, the product on the pitch really has deteriorated, and they've clearly seen enough, haven't they? I mean, it's a combination of performances. It wasn't just Spurs. You know, you are looking at the manner of the Liverpool defeat, which, Liverpool or not, was quite concerning, as you and I reflected upon in the car park after the match. Manchester United, again, losing 4-2 for the thrill of those 24 seconds. I mean, that really was up there with some of the best moments in Bielsa's tenure, when Rafinha knocks that equaliser in just a completely unexpected turn of events. But they've still then lost the game 4-2. And as we say, obviously the Everton game has been discussed ad nauseum now. So you can at least understand the logic behind the decision.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if you're looking at it from a purely business side of things, and you're putting all sentiment aside, it's a decision which a lot of people would have made. But it's because Bielsa is so intertwined with Leeds, and Leeds is so intertwined with Bielsa by this point, that it makes it such a contentious issue. But, you know, I agree with, I think it was Adam's comment, that, you know, there's ultimately the book stop. If the book doesn't stop with Bielsa, then where does it stop? Yeah. And you're looking at Radrizzani then, and you're thinking, well, if relegation jeopardizes the potential to sell the club, then, you know, and to sort of to develop Elland Road and all these long term ambitions, then they are decisions that will have been contemplated in the boardroom.
Ultimately, like you say, Joe, when the book stops with him, if he hadn't removed Bielsa and they'd gone down, there would have been people going to him in the summer and saying, why did you not remove Bielsa? You know, you have the power to do that. That's your job. You run the football club. You decide what happens with the head coach. And if they had gone down with him without a whiff of rumour about Bielsa being gone, they'd have gone to him and said, why didn't you sack him after the Liverpool game? Why didn't you sack him after the Tottenham game? We all could see what was happening. Why didn't you act? And I think that's the other side of the coin in this, isn't it? Is that right now it's really painful and it's really hard to take. But if they had left him in there and they'd gone down, as romantic as that would have been, and as sincere as that would have been in sticking by their man, a lot of fans would have gone to Andrea and said, "You're the owner of the football club. You have to make these decisions. We can't make them. We're the fans."
Exactly.
Why didn't you get rid of him? So, I mean, that is the side of the corner. And that is clearly the way Andrea is thinking. He's looking at it thinking, if I don't act, we are going down. And then I'm going to have a lot more questions, and a lot more expensive questions to answer in the summer. Because inevitably, as we all know, that squad would get hacked to bits in the transfer market if they went down. I mean, you'd pretty much be left with the Championship players that brought them up, really. Minus Calvin Phillips, minus Pascal Struijk. Maybe even minus Patrick Bamford. So Andre's taking the decision. He's, you know, he's in the position he is in life because he takes high risk decisions that involve large sums of money and large corporations. So he's taken the decision, and none of us will know if it was the right decision until mid to late May. So we'll leave it with this comment that I've just found from Angela McPartland. Words can't express how upset I am. Legend is bandied about so much, but he truly has stolen our hearts and minds. And Joe, that is an apt way to finish.
Yeah.
We saw the comment in the press release. They are looking to have some kind of lasting, what was the word they used? A monument,
permanent,
a memorial?
Permanent tribute.
Okay.
Permanent
and
that would suggest
there was going to be, without using the S word, you would think it's got to be a statue of some description or some kind of
commemoration.
Physical,
yeah.
I think he needs more than a plaque, really, doesn't he?
Yeah. Considering the achievement and the adversities that he's faced, it's the least that he deserves is some sort of permanent tribute to the work that he's done. And the feeling that he brought back to a city that was, I said it in a piece yesterday evening, you know, this was a deeply disaffected fan base, and it has been, for the most part, over the past 3.5 years, completely united behind one man, and that is incredibly, incredibly unique, and that's, you know, that's something which you can't fabricate, you can't engineer or manufacture. That's just something which is generated through the person and the professional that Marcelo Bielsa is.
Thank you for joining us, folks. 40-minute video on Bielsa Day, the end of an era in more ways than one. Very, very emotional day for a lot of people. Hopefully this has helped in some way with a bit of catharsis, obviously getting your comments out there and hopefully a few of you are having discussions amongst yourselves. So as I say, it's Sunday today. We are expecting, or at least the club has indicated, there will be more news tomorrow with a successor. So we will obviously be across that on leeds-live.co.uk. We've already written plenty of stuff today. So from the announcement today, what Andrea Radrazzani has said, what Victor Orta has said, the talk around the successor, as Joe says, the permanent tribute to him, presumably at Elland Road, that's all on the website. And we'll have a lot more comment going out there this evening and into tomorrow, reflecting upon this great man's time at Elland Road before we then do, as is the case in football, look ahead and you move forward into what will be a new era with whoever they look to appoint tomorrow. And then we're into Leicester City and looking at exactly how the club moves forward and looks to turn their fortunes around in the final 12 games of the season. So thanks for your time, Joe.
No, thank you for chatting with me, Baron. It's been cathartic for me, at least. I hope it's been the same for you and a few of the guys who've been listening.
Thank you, folks. We will, of course, be live again when we get some more major news, I presume, tomorrow. So we'll see you around then.